and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's doing well. Middle of this December, we have an absolutely huge show for you today. We're joined by Andrew Branca in the third hour. He is just an absolute wealth of information. We'll be getting into all sorts of political conversations, political topics with him, where we are on a lot of the legal pursuits of the Trump administration. Very excited to talk to him about a huge number of topics, including how we can get rid of some of these judges that are foiling everything that Trump is trying to do. We got lots of videos to get to as well. Also, this story came out yesterday, and I talked about it a little bit, but it continued to dominate the conversation last night, The Lost Generation by Compact. So I went through this, and I got a bunch of contributing material to it. So I want to talk about not just what the effects have been in on the psyche, the mentality, the economics of America following the Black Lives Matter insanity of completely discriminating against white people openly. I want to talk about the consequences of that, but I also want to talk about where it really came from, how this wasn't. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. I got to get to the Daily Dispatch. We got a lot of stuff to talk about and not a lot of time to get into it. So let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Tuesday, the 16th of December, 2025. Hunt for Brown University gunmen starts anew as tension rises. Yes, that's right. They're starting the investigation over, I guess. The new focus on the of the hunt for the Brown University shooter appears to be a stocky person of medium height who hours before the attack was walking a few blocks from campus in dark clothes and medical mask. Officials released surveillance video and photos of that person late Monday afternoon, trying to generate leads in the two-day-old investigation after detaining, then releasing a 24-year-old Wisconsin man who they'd initially described as a person of interest. And I actually believe we have a suspect's name, if I'm not mistaken. There may be some updates about this from just a few minutes ago, if the crew can check on that, because I did see people investigating a particular name. In fact, I'll follow up on that beginning of the next segment. Meanwhile, Zelensky and Merz hail NATO-style U.S. security guarantees as real progress in peace deal. We've heard all this before, but Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and American officials are hailing progress after deep discussions on a peace deal to end the nearly four-year war with Russia. During the couple days of meetings in Berlin, U.S. officials have said there's consensus from Ukraine and Europe on about 90% of the Trump-proposed peace plan. It could be finalized within days in order to present to the Kremlin, which is unlikely to go for any scheme which doesn't feature serious territorial concessions. Zelensky late Monday said the draft is very workable, but the key questions remain unsolved. So it does seem like we are plodding our way towards peace in Europe, but not if the Europeans have anything to say about it. We'll get back to that in just a little bit. The FBI repeatedly warned that the DOJ did not have probable cause to raid Trump home, had not been corroborated. Bombshell emails have been released showing that some inside the FBI were skeptical of the Biden DOJ's push to raid Trump's Florida resort home. The FBI in summer 2022 raised repeated objections to raiding Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home in Florida, warning agents did not believe the Biden Justice Department had enough evidence to establish probable cause, and the then former president had broken the law in handling classified documents, according to the bombshell memos turned over on Tuesday to Congress. We can read those memos a little bit later. But yeah, essentially they had no probable cause because, it was a purely political act of malice and repression from the opposition, to the opposition party from the ruling party. Meanwhile, Pentagon elevates probe of Senator Mark Kelly as scrutiny grows over boat strikes. The Pentagon has upgraded its review of Senator Mark Kelly's unlawful order video to an official command investigation, per the Washington Post. As a retiree, he's subject to the UCMJ. His lawyers call any action unconstitutional. He's allowed to break the law with impunity, actually. Oh, you're getting probed, Senator Kelly. Senator Kelly, I regret to inform you, the probe is increasing its depth and scope. Finally, tensions were thawed. Candace Owens and Erica Kirk had extremely productive meeting because apparently right-wing women are some sort of mafia that has to have sit-downs every once in a while.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress, and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VFM members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VFM membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexShowStore.com.
Watching the War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. What did I say I was going to get to as soon as we came back in? I started talking about something and then I decided I didn't have time. No time. We do have just so much to get into. I think we'll start with, oh my God, where do we even start with? The terror attacks, the shooting at Brown University that's still unsolved, the shooting on Bondi Beach in Australia that is serving as the catalyst for all sorts of horrific and repressive and censorious activities by the Australian government. I think we'll start with the Antifa cell, the Turtle Island Liberation Front that was busted by the FBI as they claimed that they had plans to plant four explosives around the Los Angeles New Year's Eve celebration, trying to commit a terrorist attack there. And I have more evidence that I pretty much nailed this as soon as it came out. And I know I've explained this in bits and pieces before, but maybe I need to lay it all out for you, because there is a new video that they've released. We'll go to clip number three here. This is the FBI revealing footage from a surveillance plane showing the four accused Antifa members setting off a bomb in the desert as a test run. We'll go to that video here and then explain to you how it is. How is it that the FBI had a surveillance plane above the subjects of this investigation? Obviously, they knew what was going to happen, almost certainly because they themselves set up the test in the desert and the explosives. We'll get into why I think this and how this plays into the modus operandi of FBI as they simultaneously and debatably investigate terror plots while also being actively involved in starting and continuing them. I'll explain how this works on the other side. First, here's the FBI explaining and showing some of the surveillance footage that they got of this Antifa cell trying to make bombs to blow up Americans. Let's watch.
And this is, the video is, do you want to describe the video?
Yeah, I'll describe the video. So, as I mentioned in my talking points, on December 12th, a group of individuals, again, members of this anti-government group, traveled out to the desert to test their explosive devices. They had precursor chemicals there, and they were going to create these bombs in the desert. What they are starting to do is put their chemicals and wares and the components out on the table there. This footage that you're watching is from our surveillance plane, and then what happened after this is the Los Angeles FBI SWAT team, along with the FBI's hostage rescue team, moved in and arrested all four subjects without incident.
So now we'll take some questions.
You mentioned these five companies. Can you get more specific about them?
Yeah, we're not naming the victim companies, but I'll generally describe them as logistics centers. You can think of like Amazon-type logistics centers, but we're not naming the specific companies at this time. There were at least five locations that they intended to target within Orange County and Los Angeles County. Again, we're not giving out the specific sites, But they were willing and wanting to do more if they could recruit more members to their radical efforts there.
You mentioned the arrest in New Orleans. Do you think that there are other people involved? Or are
there,
other there
are definitely more members to this group. As far as who was specifically involved in this New Year's Eve terror plot, we believe we've arrested all the members who were specifically involved in that particular plot. We did execute search warrants to people who are also part of this group. As we review that evidence, if we determine that there are any other individuals who knew about this or provided any assistance, we will obviously be charging them as well.
So hopefully we see this investigation expand and not just the people actively caught with the bombs, you know, in the desert trying to test them. Hopefully they won't be the only ones rounded up for this, because obviously, they were just one group that was actually a splinter faction of a larger group with a bunch of ridiculous names, but it's sort of, you know, evidence that they are, in fact, a group. Like, they're like a conspiracy. You almost might call it a conspiracy. It's almost like you could use RICO charges to get everybody involved in the planning or the discussion or the secrecy around it. Hopefully, it's not just these four people, although it is good to see these four people at least be held responsible for this. Now, again, people were asking, how did the FBI have a spy plane directly above these people ready to film them as they were testing their explosive devices? And the answer almost certainly is because the FBI themselves invited them out to the desert and provided them the explosive devices. Now, I'm not exactly saying this is something the FBI shouldn't do. It's just this is their modus operandi. This is exactly how it works. And again, I've explained a particular case like this, where it was a guy who was like a sovereign citizen type. His bank, his house was being foreclosed on by the bank. This decision was made by some district attorney or some judge, somebody who, you know, some municipal authority. And this guy wanted to blow him up. He wanted to bomb him at his courthouse. And so he goes to his nephew, who's an explosives expert, and says, you know, you need to help us. Recruits him into his sort of sovereign citizen militia group. And of course, the nephew pretends to go along with it, calls the FBI and goes, I think we have a problem here. The FBI says, it's fine. Go along with him. Go along with it. And in fact, when it's time to actually go test the bomb, we'll give you bombs to take out and test. And again, this is all about securing a conviction, because you can't just arrest people and say, trust us, they were going to bomb somewhere. You have to show that they not just were thinking about it, weren't just interested in the idea of bombing people. You actually have to give them an opportunity to think that they are bombing somebody. So then you can guarantee the conviction. You can go, look, this person planted what they thought was a bomb, got out the phone that they thought would detonate the bomb, hit the code that they thought would detonate the bomb. Lucky for us, we, the FBI, provided the bomb. It was inert, but that's what they do to, you know, get the conviction. So here it looks like they raided them during the testing phase, which I guess would be adequate. I don't know. They thought they could get the conviction based off this, but that's almost certainly what happened, is that early on, somebody in this Turtle Island group probably reached out to everybody else in the group and said, we're thinking about doing this. Somebody in that group thought, gee, if they really pull this off and they investigate it and they find out that we knew about it, we could be held liable. I'm going to go turn this into the FBI. And we actually have confirmation of this. So again, you know, it's like, it's not the FBI shouldn't be doing this. This is what they should be doing. They should be trying to identify plots, bomb plots, things like that, before they happen and interfering. In fact, talking to an FBI guy while filming the movie about this exact scenario that I'm describing, the way the FBI perceives it is basically you don't want to be constantly playing goal line defense. In other words, by the time the bomb is made and being planted, it's like pretty much too late to stop it. So they want to do things that stop the plot at the 50-yard line or the 30-yard line or the 10-yard line, you know, near your end zone. So they get involved very early. They seed people into the groups. They connect them with, you know, people who can help them out, who turn out to be FBI agents, who give them bombs to go test in the desert or give them fake bombs to go plant, and then they bust them. You know, kind of like the January 6th bomber, kind of like that. Here's what AG Pam Bondi said about it. After an intense investigation, the Department of Justice, working with our FBI, prevented what would have been a massive and horrific terror attack in the Central District of California. The Turtle Island Liberation Front, a far-left, pro-Palestine, anti-government, and anti-capitalist group, was preparing to conduct a series of bombings against multiple targets in California beginning on New Year's Eve. The group also planned to target ICE agents and vehicles. This was an incredible effort by our U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI to ensure Americans can live in peace. We continue to pursue these terror groups and bring them to justice. Again, I would just ask, why is it that the only people being arrested for this stuff are the people actively involved in the physical attacks? Why in Texas, when an Antifa group attacks an ICE facility and shoots agents with a established multi-stage military ambush, are only the people actually on the ground there that day arrested? How are you not using these arrests to arrest or at least identify and dismantle the wider networks? I don't understand. And again, they keep wanting to play this up as if they're a anti-Palestinian group, but obviously that was just one facet of their general anti-American ideology. Turtle Island, again, is a reference to what America was called before Europeans got here. It's an anti-colonialist group, aka just communist agitators. As Max Blumenthal notes, it looks like another terror plot manufactured by the FBI, which relied on well-paid confidential human informants to justify repression of leftist protest groups. The targets were here operated a recently created IG account with less than 1,000 followers. So this is from the filing. It says the CHS, that is the Confidential Human Service, is cooperating with law enforcement and is a validated and vetted source. The CHS has been a reliable source of information since in or around August 2021. The CHS is cooperating for financial compensation. The CDS does not have any criminal history. The CHS provided past reliable reporting in other cases and has provided reliable reporting in this case. So it sounds like there was a professional human source that had been working with the FBI for the last 4 years involved in this. Again, Max Blumenthal is saying, you know, they're using this as an excuse to bust up leftist protest networks. I'd say, yeah, good. I'd say, okay, good. When those quote unquote protest networks want to plant bombs in American cities, yeah, I think that's actually exactly what the FBI is supposed to do. Ken Silva, again, noting the case files here. He says, one of the defendants allegedly provided an FBI informant with an eight-page document describing the bomb plot in this case. The informant has been working with the Bureau since 2021, no criminal record, meaning the person is a paid operative. And they say that in November 2025, Carroll, a member of the Turtle Island Liberation Front, provided a confidential human source with an eight-page handwritten document titled Operation Midnight Sun that described this bombing plot. One of the defendants... I'm sorry, that's the one that's the same one here in response to FBI Director Kash Patel celebrating this. They say an undercover FBI employee was also included, so this would be in addition to the confidential human source. The co-conspirators met on December 7th to further discuss the bombing plot and their intent to conduct future attacks on federal officials. Based on information from the CHS and FBI personnel, including an undercover FBI employee, UCE, who was present at the meeting, they know that on the early morning of December 7th, 2025, the CHS and UCE met with Carol Page in a mail to the group known as Nomad, later identified as Dante Garfield or Gaffield. Carol stated she had the plan and handed Garfield four sheets of paper with writing on the front and back of each page, which Gaffield said the UCE read. The UCE later told law enforcement that the paper contained detailed instructions on how to construct a black powder pipe bomb. Okay, so that's what we got. Now, again, where this is maybe a tad bit suspicious or at least, you know, related to other things we've seen in the past is if we go to, I believe we go to clip number two here. It's the same, you know, video that we saw earlier, clip number two. But for now, take a look at the African-American FBI agent who's standing there because he has cropped up in other bombing plots that we've seen before. Let's go to clip number two here.
So, as I mentioned in my talking points,
so this guy.
On December 12th, a group of individuals, again, members of this anti-government group, traveled out to the desert to test their explosive devices. They had precursor chemicals there, and they were going to...
We've seen this, but that guy at the podium giving that message, people recognized him. Ken Silva, in particular, recognized him. He was actually on with Brandon Morello on American Journal earlier this morning. But he noticed that he's the same FBI official who was giving a press conference about a bomb plot to bomb a fertility clinic in Florida. The suspicious thing about this, from May of this year, May 2025, headlineusa.com, FBI reportedly seen near suspected fertility clinic bomber's home before the attack. Guy Edward Barkus of 29 Palms, California, has been identified by the FBI as the suspect in an apparent car bombing Saturday that damaged the clinic in an upscale city of Palm Springs in the desert east of Los Angeles. It killed Barkus in the process. Most of the media has been focused on Barkus's antinatalist views, which hold that people should not continue to procreate, authorities said. You would think this type of thing would be included in the statistics of leftist domestic terror, but it's not. At least one reporter has raised questions about whether the alleged bomber was on the FBI's radar beforehand. At the FBI press conference on Sunday, a reporter from the area's local news channel 3 asked about the matter. The press conference was shut down immediately after she asked her question. And we actually have that footage. We can go to that. Clip number 4 here. This is all the way back in May of 2025. Same agent that we just saw present the information about the Turtle Island case was there in Florida, shutting down the press conference after being asked about why FBI agents were seen a day before this bombing took place. Let's watch.
Combing through right now is kind of what led us to that nihilist belief.
Breaking news channel 3. We had a reporter on scene at the 29 Palms area yesterday, and community members were telling her that there was an FBI presence there in the days leading up to that. Can you confirm that?
I cannot.
Okay, folks, that concludes this press conference. We're done, folks.
No more questions. Okay, sorry, you asked the question about the thing you're not supposed to know about. We're done here. Thanks. And my mistake, I keep saying Florida. It's California, Palm Springs. So that's kind of interesting, isn't it? Okay, so here's a guy who's in the FBI. Obviously, he's a part of whatever squad in California deals with potential bomb threats. Again, nothing particularly suspicious about this, except that in the case of the Palm Springs bombing, the bomb went off. The bomb went off. So again, from the story from Ken Silva, we had a reporter on the scene at 29 Palms area yesterday, and community members were telling her that there was an FBI presence there in the days leading up to the attack. Can you confirm that? I cannot, responded Akil Davis. I guess that's the guy's name, the assistant director in charge of the FBI's Los Angeles office. Another FBI official immediately piped in, ending the conference just as Davis was about to take another question. The FBI insists that Barkus was not on its radar. Authorities were executing a search warrant Sunday in 29 Palms, a city of 28,000 residents, around 50 miles northwest of Palm Springs. As part of the investigation, the bomb gutted the American Reproductive Center Fertility Clinic and shattered the windows of nearby buildings along a palm tree-lined street. Witnesses describe a loud boom followed by a chaotic scene with people screaming terror as glass strewn along the sidewalk and street. So this is what happens when the FBI maybe doesn't have the control that it should over its confidential human sources, its false flag PSYOP terrorist attacks. Sometimes they go wrong. Sometimes they go rogue. Sometimes the people that you're entrapping realize they're being entrapped and decide to just go with it anyway. Maybe, you know, they hand him the bomb and the guy knows enough about bombing to know that it was a fake bomb after all and made a real one instead. It's not a great look if the FBI repeatedly bust people in the same way where they pretend to go along with the bomb plot only to catch them in the act at the last minute. If sometimes it goes wrong, if sometimes you have bombings that take out fertility clinics and people in the neighborhood said, hey, you know, the FBI was hanging around that house all day yesterday. So it sounds like maybe the FBI, you know, utterly failed in this regard. Maybe that's why they moved up the arrest from being, you know, like actually during the event to the testing process in the desert. Luckily, nobody was killed in this, but obviously easily could have. The bombing injured 4 other people, although Davis said the embryos at the facility were saved. I guess this is the convenience of being the FBI. If you succeed, then you get all of the kudos of busting a terror plot. And if you fail, which actually means you just participated in a terror plot, and you get to cover it up for national security and, you know, sources and methods, claims that mean you don't have to tell anybody what you're actually doing. It's very convenient for them. You have to wonder how many other terrorist attacks that have occurred recently have been involved with the FBI beforehand. If the FBI uses this MO of having people inside these groups, sometimes for years on end, feeding them information, how many times have those people been allowed to carry out attacks with the full knowledge of the FBI who refused to do anything to stop it? I have to wonder. And when you look at something like the January 6th pipe bomb, you see an exact pattern of behavior with the FBI where this has happened before, where they are involved with somebody that they're trying to trick into thinking they're bombing something, and it turns out they just go bomb the place. They just go bomb the thing, and then the FBI has to scramble to cover up their own awareness and participation in this. It all points to the inordinate corruption and incompetence in our federal agencies. Doesn't make me feel any safer, that's for damn sure. We do have some more information, kind of, about the Brown shooter. The Providence Police Department on Tuesday released a new image of the suspect gunman wanted for killing two and injuring nine others in a mass shooting at Brown University on Saturday. The image shows a person walking down the street with black pants, a dark two-toned jacket, a face mask, a beanie, and a bag. This comes after authorities released additional information and photos of the suspect on Monday. The FBI has offered a reward of up to $50,000 for information that leads to the identification, arrest, and conviction of the suspect. Again, we have very little information about this. It is truly bizarre to see headlines like, after mess-ups, they are starting the investigation over from scratch. What are you inviting the guy back? Hey, come kill more people and we'll start over. We'll see if we can get you this time. It is insane. And of course, the most insane part is that all of these universities are absolutely covered in cameras. There's absolutely no way that this is the only footage that we have of this guy. That is a lie. And by the way, I mentioned it yesterday, but it hadn't been confirmed. It was merely rumors. Now it more or less has been confirmed. The Brown mass shooter reportedly yelled Allahu Akbar before attacking. Several media outlets quoted students and other witnesses saying that the shooter yelled Allahu Akbar before opening fire in the building. Now, as a community note to this, maybe some people are saying he might have yelled something else. We did have the official report saying he yelled something. They just didn't say what that thing was. Yeah, you have witness interviews saying it was Allahu Akbar, which seems to align with rumors. Now, I'm not actually going to say this guy's name because I don't know how confirmed this is, but essentially people have been monitoring Brown University and they found that they have taken down a page that was celebrating a particular first-year Muslim student. Now, I don't know if this means anything. I don't know if this was just a coincidence, but basically they have these pages that are student spotlights, and they have a student spotlight for a particular Muslim freshman that apparently, without explanation, was deleted from their website yesterday. So people monitoring the website noticed that and are pointing to that saying, hey, maybe this is who they're looking for, which would mean, and I'm not showing the name, we get in trouble for this, crew. This is one thing that I'm not going to play games with. It's a mass shooting, and I will not be publishing anybody's name without a mugshot to go along with it. But you can look it up for yourself if you want to find out whose name they removed. And it would hint that not only is the idea this was a Muslim attacker, you know, more likely confirmed, but it would also hint that the people in charge know the guy's name and are withholding it for some reason. Maybe they want to scrub his social media before they announce this person. Could that have something to do with it? I think so. We'll be right back.
My Pillow alone, just My Pillow, not counting me, it cost them over $200 million directly related to Arctic Frost, everybody. What they've done to my company, tried to just wipe them off the face of the earth because I'm out there going, we need to secure our elections. We need to secure our election. We need to get rid of the machines. We need to go to paper ballots.
You were literally terrorized and targeted, and it's in the documents.
And that thing goes so deep. It's funny, Alex. Things go so far, and then they tend to get stopped. But you guys, just know, I am never stopping. I will never stop. And my number one thing is we need to secure our election platform.
Let's talk about this. People supporting what you're doing and getting the highest quality, you name it, great products. almost all of it made in America. Your great Giza sheets have that special cotton everybody knows comes from Egypt, but you're amazing. Right. I've got some on my king bed. Talk about the incredible products you've got at MyPillow.com/Alex. And again, I want to be clear. We are only here still hanging on, but now people support at thealexjonesstore.com or at MyPillow.com/Alex is absolutely critical. This is now literally up to you every month whether we're going to stay in this fight. We're both workaholics. We love people. We love telling the truth. You know, these corrupt people, you know, think we're schmucks because we're not corrupt. No, we know how to be corrupt if we wanted to, dumbasses. But we like being good people. That's what builds a society.
We're the tip of the spear. This is it. We only get one shot at this. And like I said, about 2 years ago, they said, Mike, would you, if you could turn back time here and go back, and if you wanted to spoke out about the election, wouldn't stand your ground, you know, look what they've destroyed, tried to destroy you. I said, I would never change a thing knowing what I know and knowing what this is critical. And that's where we're at. And it's because of all of you, because you buy our products. And that's why we're putting right now on sale our five flagship products. We have five flagship products, our biggest products of all time. For you go to MyPillow.com/Alex, and you guys are going to see we've got the Giza Dream Sheets. If you put that thing up there, these are all for Christmas presents. You guys, you can get the best Christmas presents ever. The Giza Dream Sheets, the towels, the slippers. On the MyPillow Premiums, we've sold 85 million MyPillows because they work. You save over 50% on those. And then the mattress toppers made in the USA, $149.98, as low as that, depending on the size. But we got in the premium My Towels that actually work. You save 50% there, $39.98. And here's one of my favorites, the My Slippers. Best slippers in history. They're normally $149.98, $39.98. And once they're gone, they're gone. We can't get those back. They're made with impact gel, made out of soybeans. And so you walk on them and it's like walking on a cloud. It's absolutely awesome, this patented gel that's in there. And then you have the Giza Dream Sheets. It's my favorite product. It's our president's favorite product. And not as low as $29.98. And I want to show you one more. You guys go there, and you're getting five of these Bible pillows. These are very dear to me. They've got stories on the back. You get basically five Christmas gifts for $29.98 for all five. You got the baby Jesus, Noah's Ark, Daniel in the Lion's Den, but you get all five of them. So you get five individual gifts for under $6 a piece. Free shipping, promo code Alex on your entire order. No matter what you are, this is an exclusive free shipping on your entire order. So go to MyPillow.com/Alex, and it's a win-win-win. You guys are supporting my employee-owned company. You're getting the best products at the best prices in history. You're supporting this great, Alex's great show. I'll tell you, Alex, I can't be prouder, more proud than anyone that support your show and what you put out and help save this country more than anyone, and I mean that.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
This is the War Room. Just listening to my favorite rendition of O Holy Night. Christmas is coming up fast, folks. You still have time, depending on where you live. I know yesterday was the cutoff for getting your deliveries anywhere in time for Christmas, but we, of course, ship quickly to the continental United States, and you still have time to get your Christmas gifts at thealexjonesstore.com. Massive discounts across the board, of course. Incredible products, Ultra Methylene Blue. People go crazy over this stuff. Of course, we have the new Ultra DNA Revival. That's like the badass little brother of DNA Force Plus, one of the most popular products ever at the InfoWars at InfoWarsStore.com. Well, the AlexJonesStore.com now has Ultra DNA Revival, helps repair some of the damage to your DNA that simply wears out over time. It's not something that anybody doesn't need. You know what I mean? It's like literally everybody needs this, unless you have found the fountain of youth and are somehow immune to the ravages of time. Yeah, you need these products, okay? If you're not immortal, if you're not a demigod, you need the AlexJonesStore.com. We all age, we all go through, you know, times of ill health, but the AlexJonesStore.com can keep you at tip-top shape and help you recover in those dips. The AlexJonesStore.com, creatine, just incredible stuff. Massive sales, and of course, order quickly if you want to get it by Christmas or New Year's, so these supplements can help you achieve your goals and fulfill your resolutions in 2026. With that, I want to talk about this Lost Generation article. Before I do that, last segment we were talking about all of the terrorist attacks from over the weekend. We don't have a lot of new information about the attack in Australia, although what we do have is absurd. In fact, it's now been revealed that the man who ran up and disarmed one of the gunmen, incredibly, unimaginably brave act, ran up to this guy who had a shotgun, ripped the shotgun out of his hands. Then that guy, the hero who disarmed the shooter, was then shot by police, who apparently didn't show up for 20 minutes. There's footage of the police hiding behind cars while the shooting continues. They hide for 20 minutes. They finally show up, and a female officer shoots the one guy who's heroically fighting back. In fact, that's not true. There were other people who were heroically fighting back. It wasn't caught on video, so didn't quite get that the visual of it, but very brave people in Australia trying to prevent the massacre as it unfolded with no help from the police. So that's, I mean, that is your life under globalism. It's give us your guns, we'll take care of you, but also the police aren't obligated to intervene in a violent situation. We'll wait till it all sort of peters out. And we might shoot you in the process. Whoops, sorry. Sorry about that, folks. It is absolutely pathetic. Disarming the populace, police cowering behind vehicles while citizens engage the shooters, and then when the police finally decide to get involved, they end up shooting the guy who was helping. And there's more information coming out about who this guy was. This guy apparently is an immigrant. I've heard he's possibly a Maronite Christian from Lebanon. But again, you can see sort of the, not to knock him, I mean the incredible bravery, but also the mercy. The guy interrupts a mass shooting, rips a shotgun out of the shooter's hand, trains the shotgun on the man, doesn't pull the trigger. I get it. I mean, in that instance, God only knows what's going through his mind. I can't even imagine being in that position, so I'm not criticizing or anything. I'm just saying it would have been nice for the shooting to end right there in spectacular fashion. Wouldn't it have been? And that sort of goes into the theme that we're going to talk about with Compact Magazine. And just getting over, consciously training yourself to get over the imposed cowardice of the modern world. We'll get to that in just a second. But I know Alex was going off about people blaming the shooting in Bondi Beach on Israel. And I agree, and I was even talking about this yesterday, and I posted it, and people were posting Alex's clip under mine, going, maybe you should listen to Alex, he knows what he's talking about. And I was going, I'm saying the same thing as him. I'm not trying to downplay the threat of radical Islam and Islamic terror. It's absolutely real, and I'm not allying with those people, and I've never wanted to. And that's always been my position. And I've gotten in arguments about this over the weekend. I went on a space with Suleiman whatever, because he was trying to claim that InfoWars is Zionist because of some reason or another, because we are contributing to the Zionist paradigm, the Zionist narrative about Islam taking over. And it's like, no, dude, I don't want to be taken over by Islam. What are you talking about? It's as absurd as saying, you know, supporting Israel is an anti-Muslim thing. It's just, it's not how this works. a lot of people have this dichotomous view where it's like your whole worth as a person is defined by your position on Israel. Soleimani himself said to me after Charlie Kirk's assassination, why are you sad about Charlie? He was a Zionist. As if that is my, you know, entire metric of whether somebody is worthy of life is, are they on my team when it comes to Israel's territorial expansion? Like, I could not care less about that when it comes to Charlie Kirk. It was the thing I disagreed with him most about. Charlie Kirk was firmly on my team. However the teams break out, Charlie Kirk was me. He was a white, Protestant, Christian, American man. That's my team, bro. I don't care what he thought about Zionism. I genuinely don't. But people out there have this idea that if you don't want Islam taking over, you're pro-Zionist. I know Alex has covered this enough, so I don't need to get into it. But I will say that I think it's perfectly reasonable to at least suspect Israel as having been participating in these types of things before. I said on X yesterday, if Edna Krabappel from The Simpsons finds a thumbtack in her seat, she blames Bart Simpson. Now, that might not be entirely fair to Bart, but we also don't feel that bad for him either, right? It's like, oh, someone did a prank on the teacher and they blamed Bart. Well, Bart, why would that be? Why is that, Bart? Oh, a mass terror attack out of nowhere, a psychological nuclear bomb on the people of Australia immediately being transformed into anti-Semitism law. Not exactly out of the Israeli wheelhouse, let's just say. Now, to then just assert that anything Muslims do is therefore a false flag attack by Mossad is absurd. Obviously, I'm not making that claim, and I think people that do are disingenuous and hurting their own cause. Both of these things. They are both disingenuous because they don't actually have proof for what they're claiming, and yet they are asserting it as if they do. But also, if your cause is true, if your cause is based on facts, then purporting non-facts as facts is only damaging your cause. Like, if you don't need to lie, why are you lying? You see what I mean? If your cause is totally legitimate and has all of this evidence to it, then you don't need to make up other evidence that you don't actually have. So, all of that is to say, there was a supposedly Pakistani, now people are saying Indian, foreign migrant to Australia, and his son carried out this attack. And that would not be, if this was a false flag attack, which I don't know if it is, but if it was, it would look very similar to another false flag attempted to be carried out by Israel on Mexico in 2001. This is from Monitor X 99800 on X. They say, in 2001, Mossad agents posing as Pakistani nationals entered Mexican parliament in a failed attempt to commit a massacre. The media buried the story and Israel got them back. So on October 10th, 2001, two Israelis, one of them a dual citizen of Mexico, were arrested after reportedly acting in a strange manner and failing to properly identify themselves when requested. They were later found to be carrying false Pakistani passports, firearms, as well as explosives, and identified as former members of the Israeli Special Forces. These men were then released after mediation from Israeli authorities. So apparently in 2001, right, following the September 11th attacks, Israelis were caught with explosives and guns, dressed up as Pakistanis, trying to carry out a mass casualty event in parliament in Mexico. So now that there's a mass casualty event in Australia with Pakistani nationals carrying out this attack, just in time and aligned with the wider push for global anti-Semitism superstructures, I'm not going to blame you for being suspicious. That's how I feel about it. Now, moving on, although we could delve more into this, because it is taking the exact trajectory that we always said it would, all the way back to the Piers Morgan interview with Alex Jones, when Alex is saying, you can't ban the iron bar, Piers. My argument has always been, if you take their argument to the logical conclusion, the obvious thing to ban is the thoughts that compel violence, right? Okay, you ban guns. Now people are committing crimes with knives. You ban knives. Ooh, they're going to stop being violent. Are they going to stop feeling anger? They'll start using their fists. Are you going to ban fists? Are you going to ban the human body? You can't do that. So what do? You ban the anger that inspires the violence. Or you ban the information that inspires the anger that inspires the violence. That's what you have to do if your ultimate goal is eliminating violence as a concept in your society, which is an asinine and unachievable goal. But that's what they're pursuing with gun control laws. And so if banning the tools doesn't work, you have to ban the motivation to use the tools. And so now, that's literally what Australia is saying. They're saying, we already banned guns. Now we have to ban anti-Semitism, which is just the first. We're not even really the first in Australia, but really, I should say, it's just the latest category of thought to be banned because it could inspire violence. The truth often does inspire violence. The truth often makes people angry, makes them want to do violent things. That's not an excuse to censor the truth, but that's what they're doing. But we'll move on. But that is what they're doing. Pray for Australia. I guess we go to one of these videos, but I want to get into this because I did some research. I did some backup research here to try to identify how the anti-white industrial complex came to be. Now, this is another example of an almost daily occurrence here, quotidian phenomenon we have to deal with, where bombshell news stories hit the headlines, dominate the conversation on X and elsewhere, and yet it's stuff that everybody should know by now. It's stuff that's been reported on ad nauseum for a decade. Now, I'm glad this article was written. It is a very good article. It's from Compact Magazine, The Lost Generation. It makes the argument about the discrimination against white people in a very effective and altruistic and empathetic way. It actually tells the story of several young men entering the workforce in the 2010s and the just utter desperation and discrimination that they faced as a consequence. Which is good. You know, I guess this is what we need. And actually, this is sort of our position at InfoWars and always has been. We can give you the data. People don't react to data. They react to narratives. They react to emotion. Now, you can take this in the globalist way and look at it cynically and go, we just need to manipulate people's emotion, then they'll do what we want. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if I just give you stats and go, 39% of this industry was white people and now it's 24%. Doesn't do a lot to raise your hackles, right? But if I tell you a story about one of those 29% and the fact that he, you know, loses his house because he gets fired because somebody wants to boost the ESG score and then his wife leaves him. And like, if you actually tell the story of misery that's represented by those stats, the stats actually mean something. They actually inform people and their thoughts and how they want to move forward in life. So I guess it's good that this article came out and is so well written and is so compelling and is so emotionally centered with a lot of facts within it. But it is a little bit frustrating when, like, there was never a time where this wasn't ridiculous. Just like transgenderism, just like the war in Ukraine, just like everything we deal with, there was never a time when this discrimination against white people was reasonable, understandable, justifiable, and it's gone off the rails since then. No. It was ridiculous from the beginning. Everybody should have recognized it was ridiculous from the beginning. And everybody should have stood up against this powerfully, strongly, in whatever way that they can. Legally, just internally in your own company. But we didn't for some reason. The American people didn't for some reason. InfoWars, we did. No, we got it. We understood it. We were shouting from the rooftops before 99% of people even knew this was coming. But for the vast majority of Americans, I don't get it. I don't. Same thing with transgenderism. It's just like, how did anybody think this was normal? At what point did somebody say, hey, I know my daughter thinks she's a boy. Let's give her a mastectomy. Who was the first person to not act with, you know, insane incredulity in response to that? Who was the first person to go, hey, you know, maybe we should mutilate our daughter because she's mentally ill. That's a good idea. Somebody at some point decided that was a normal thing to believe, and then everybody else just went along with it. I don't get it. Do you need somebody else to tell you that this is absurd? It's the white guilt thing, obviously, is mostly what it is. And it's also the effectiveness of the psychological pressure points being activated here. Because if you were one of these young men who was discriminated against, you understood that your failure to get a job, your failure to establish yourself, was all but guaranteed if you pushed back. That your only hope was in either meekly going along with this, trying to see if you could skirt under the radar, or actively becoming a like prominent perpetrator of this crime. Your only hope was to like pretend to be gay and act like you were also a flagrant leftist idiot who wanted to tear down your own people. Then maybe you could, you know, be granted a spot at the table. But that speaking up was the last thing you should do because of the social pressures that were wielded. And that's what I want to talk about here is those pressures, the social pressures, how they were wielded, how we can be informed by this to not fall for it again. Now, again, I'm not saying this in retrospect. I'm saying this in condemnation. I'm saying this to everybody that fell for this. What is wrong with you? I hope you've learned your lesson. This was always obvious from the beginning. And it's so unbelievable that anybody ever fell for this. There's like, oh, we're going to discriminate against white people. And white people went, okay. Why? Why did you say okay to that? Why did you believe their justification? Let me get into the article. Let me actually read to you what it says and some of the more astonishing, you know, insights in this. But essentially, the argument that it's making is that the people to blame for the fact that white people don't exist in all these industries anymore are the older white Gen X boomers. Because they're the ones that sold out their own sons. They're the ones that sold out their own grandsons. They're the ones that kept their cushy jobs and pulled the ladder up behind them to make it impossible for anybody like them to get where they are. See, they were indoctrinated and inculcated into this anti-white mindset over their entire lives. We're talking about boomers here, right? The baby boomer, people born right after World War II, the people whose entire lives have been dominated by the post-World War II propaganda environment. He says, in 2011, the year I moved to Los Angeles, white men were 48% of lower-level TV writers. By 2024, they accounted for just 11.9%. Deliberate, on purpose, like, this doesn't just happen, okay? Now, what he says is that, in retrospect, 2014 was the hinge, the year DEI became institutionalized across American life. Now, why would that be? What happened in 2014? That's what I wanted to look into. Now, this was basically just from this guy's personal observation. He talks about how ham-fisted it was, the way that DEI was being implemented. But it didn't matter how ham-fisted it was because nobody did anything about it. Like, this is the bizarre thing. He's like shocked that in hiring meetings, they openly say, don't hire white people. It's like, why are you shocked by this? First of all, they are not shy about how they genuinely hate white people, want to disempower them, want to disenfranchise them. Like, you should not be surprised by this. And also, why wouldn't they? They're sitting in a room full of white guys. They go, we're not going to hire any more white guys. And all the white guy goes, oh, okay. yeah, why are you shocked that they're so open and blatant? You're all pussies. Like, do you not understand that? The correct response at the time, when somebody in this blatant and outrageous way is just like, we're going to try to diversify. That means no white people and no men, okay? The correct response would be, excuse me, what the hell did you just say? Are you trying to get the FCC to kick our door down or whatever? Are you trying to get us in trouble with the federal government openly discriminating? You are fired. Actually, you're fired. Now, how dare you say such an outrageous thing? I cannot imagine what made you think that would be an appropriate sentiment to express. Get the hell out of our office immediately. Is that not exactly what the response would be for literally any other group? I mean, my God. Should I just rewrite this article and write the word Jews? Will that inform people on what exactly we're talking about here? Will it break through the propaganda firewall around your brain that makes you understand the open, unacceptable discrimination at play here and how you don't have to stand for it? This is like my ultimate goal. How do I get people to get over that? How do I compel people to be confident enough in their own beliefs to simply assert the truth and prevent the lies from taking over? How do I convince you to feel exactly the same when you hear the word Jew, as you hear the word white, as you hear the word black, as you hear the word Indian? None of it matters in terms of the value of the thing being described. What matters is understanding that these racial designations matter to the people involved. And you don't have to be silent about it. You don't have to sit there and let people abuse you because of your race. You don't have to let them replace everybody like you because you get a pat on the head. You are literally selling out your own children to people who despise you, and you think that makes you a good person. What the hell is wrong with you? And what is this psychological imperative where if I gave an article to a normie that says white people are being discriminated against, they don't care. If I give them the same article with any other designation, they think it's the worst thing in the world. How do we get over that imposed discrepancy, that imposed cognitive dissonance that is like the prison door on the jail cell of the New World Order? We can open it at any point. Everybody has a key. Nobody has the ability to check their pockets and pull it out. It's wild how simple it is to defeat all of this.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do, yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here. A year after the Onion said they bought us, We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.